Hi friends, Brian here. We discuss Repulsion as the first film on this episode of the podcast. Thought I'd put a content warning here at the beginning because it does deal with some heavy themes of sexual violence. So if that is something you'd like to avoid, you might want to skip that segment or this episode. Either way, hope you enjoy and have a good day.
Click is something else. I feel like it should be good, but it's kind of not.
I like Click. And the thing is, I probably shouldn't be saying this given that we have to be professional movie reviewers, but I really do like a lot of Adam Sandler movies. It's what I grew up on.
Well, welcome to the Pretentious Movie Sheet podcast. We have an opening available. If you'd like to join the podcast as my co-host, give me a comment on my Instagram page. That's
how many of you can shittily play Plateau? I watched Marty Music for 2 seconds. Now I think I'm a rock star.
No, you're
fucking
good.
Hose. And popping pillies, man.
Oh my God. I, of course, kid, I would not want to do this podcast with anybody other than Mr. Jay Copeland himself.
Jay Copeland himself,
Christian,
who is
Bronco.
That?
How are you doing, my friend?
I'm hanging in there. It's the first week of school for me. Back to school. Like Rodney Dangerfield. I'm going to do a triple Lindy out of this window once I start getting too much work.
Bad. Do not like it. I feel that. I'm in my second week of graduate school. I've been enjoying it. It's been kind of it's been interesting.
What? No applause? I mean, who are we performing in front of here?
Ooh. I gotta strut my stuff, dude. Gotta low key do a little humble flex, you know?
Oh yeah.
I just uploaded some more stuff to the Instagram today, and a friend of mine was saying, like, he saw me put up the Scott Pilgrim one where it was a TikTok where I had the poster as a green screen, and I let the green screen be up for a second, and then I popped in front of it and started talking, and he saw that on his feed, and he was like, oh, somebody put up a thing of Scott Pilgrim. Oh, there's Brian. Like, he did not expect it. fair play. I wouldn't expect it either. However, you know, my apologies about scaring your friend.
It's kind of like the old meme compilations where, you know, you have the person in the green screen and John Cena peels it back and goes, are you sure about that?
I absolutely adore that, and whoever cut out that image, whoever put up that green screen footage of John Cena pushing that down, that they are a god among men. Transitioning over to stuff we've been watching this week, I just I uploaded some more content about the Beach House. And I'm probably, after we're done recording here, going to record something about The Host, which I just watched right before we're recording this. And I mentioned on the commentary track that I recorded for that I'm recording the podcast with you right now. But
about me, I might add, Dick.
I'm, I'm sorry. I will get you in.
You won't
on
let
the,
me borrow a Shudder, but I'll let him use my WWE Network account.
I always offer you my Shudder. No, I do borrow his WWE Network account. Because I was like, I got too much paying for, but also like, you know, I also want Shudder, so something's got to give.
And I know that feeling. I had to drop a couple to get New Japan World. That one was worth it. And you know, it's difficult having Hulu and Netflix too. So
it is truly up. we're hurting over here. We're having all these streaming services. It poor us, dude.
I know, right? There's just too many options. Did you ever think that there would come a day where people are just getting pissed because there's too much content?
See, it's funny because, like, everybody's cutting the cord, right?
Yeah.
And, like, cable is expensive, like, excessively expensive.
I don't have cable at the moment at my apartment, and I am not going to get it. There's streaming services, possibly illegal, that are much, much cheaper, that can get you all the channels you need. Yeah, anybody with a jailbroken Fire Stick, that's what it is, can get anything they want.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I don't think you'd know anything about that, right?
That's why I stuttered and stammered and Goldblumed my way through that. I just had
you mean
no
Shudder?
Idea how to. What is Shudder? What is a Fire Stick? What is
my dream one day? I hope I haven't sullied my chances by giving the Beach House a Shudder exclusive a not so great review. However, my dream is to be sponsored by Shudder, because I absolutely love Shudder. However, I will not say anything more positive about Shudder until they sponsor me. So Shudder, if you ever listen to this, sponsor us.
Shudder, you can feel the heat from the bridges being burned by the upload of this next little review. No, I love the concept of Shudder. Me and Brian, the whole conception of this podcast is pretty much because of horror movies. They are so important to us in so many different ways. And you know, I've always wanted to get the Shudder account. It's just never been feasible. So if we do get a sponsor, I am immediately hopping on there and I'm checking out so many of the originals. I'm a huge Creepshow fan. Horror Noir is a documentary I have been dying to see. I have been dying to see that. But not only that, like, there's just such a, I feel like we're doing
a
sponsored ad for them.
No more positive things until they pay
us. I know,
us.
Right? Start throwing a couple of dollars our way.
Because honestly, like, I it's not that I don't want to say good things about Shudder. It's that I really want to, but I also want to start making money. So, because I'm a greedy son of a bitch.
Hey, Shudder, throw us a couple of bones our way. We'll start reviewing some more stuff on there.
But don't let them be human bones, or else it's going to end up like the Poltergeist, as talked in their cursed films series.
Spooky.
It's kind of cool too, because like the host is a Shudder exclusive, and that is it's under an hour long, and
you really
not be able to probably. Like, if it weren't for Shudder, because it's not feature length, and I honestly had a good time watching it, go check out the commentary track on the Pretentious Movie Sheet podcast, or excuse me, Pretentious Movie Sheet YouTube channel. You probably wouldn't be able to find, they probably won't be able to get distribution if there weren't a Shudder in the world, because there's not a lot of there's not a lot of opportunities for stuff in terms of media or distribution for something that's not full feature length. And you know, Shudder's the perfect place, because you know, a short horror movie You know, again, like it's the perfect location. So Shudder, sponsor us. I want to love you.
We want to say good things. We want to.
We want to.
We will. We need a little more incentive. No, I was going to say the same thing about something like that with Shudder. I had a conversation with my my film friend. My connections keep growing, Brian.
Networking.
she lives in California. Oh, that's pretty close to some other famous people. Do you know who else lives in California?
George Clooney.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh my God! No way. Shia LaBeouf.
What? No, but I was gonna say that's the great thing about Netflix and Hulu is that they've had this infinite budget that they throw at these young filmmakers, and they're able to create these like really crazy things. I doubt Stranger Things would look as great as it does had it ended up on a cable network, and had it not had the freedom and little restrictions that it does have right now, I don't think it would have succeeded as much as it would if it was on an ABC or an NBC. So it's a great thing that there's so many options out there and so many more companies that are able to create stars. People would have killed to have these kind of opportunities now. And I think it's awesome. And it's kind of strange because ever since the birth of the internet, we've really seen people make the best of it. Just look at the YouTube market and how much people have blown up. I mean, Christ, Mr. Beast just gave away an island.
Yeah. No, I mean, just to touch real quick, God, I'm trying to find it. I was watching a movie and I'm going to kick myself if I can't find it or remember it. But I'm pretty certain it was a Netflix exclusive, and it was... I think it's a German film, but it was dubbed pretty well into English. Oh, God, I can't. We'll try and find the name of it, but it was really good. It was about like a kidnapping, and that it was half decent. It wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good. The Beach House, which is a Shudder exclusive. You know, you can see my extended thoughts on that on the pretentious movie sheet Instagram, but man, you know, but also The Host, you know, I think that was something that was, I imagine, funded by Shudder as well. So overall,
kudos
gotta for say putting that. Up some great exclusive content.
Seriously, give yourselves a pat on the back, and while you're at it, please sponsor us. It's been quite a weird week for me. I usually it's funny, I should be busier than ever, but I had a lot of time to kind of look at a lot of things. I was able to see quite a few movies in addition to the two we will be reviewing today, which are Repulsion and The Others.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm really excited for those two. Two movies I hadn't seen before, and I probably wouldn't have seen had we not made this list. It's great to explore and find things you wouldn't see normally. But yeah, no, I started my film class today, and it was great. You know, we're really going over a lot of classic films from the early 30s, and that's kind of always been, and Brian knows this about me, I'm a history buff when it comes to anything nerdy. Whether it's whether it's wrestling or movies or comic books, just anything pop culture. So it's awesome kind of exploring that generation and kind of hearing like all the stories behind everything, kind of understanding why people went this way and how salacious certain things were before a code of ethics was in place. And one thing I didn't know was that, you know, movies weren't protected by the Constitution for a really long time. They weren't considered art.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, people from different states could sue people because, morality laws were different in Kansas from Minnesota, which is why like coming out of the 30s, everybody had to abide by these weird like codes and ethics. So, you know, instead of filming multiple scenes or things to send to different markets, they would just, you know, cut it all out. So eventually it did get protected, and we get movies like A Repulsion, or like A Fly, you know, ones that are pretty disturbing or pretty gruesome. So it's really interesting seeing the groundwork that was laid for later films. The movie I watched today, it was Heroes for Sale. I'm trying to think of the director. I want to give him credit, but fantastic movie. My God, it's such a critique of the American dream, and it's really, really, really good. Anybody that hasn't seen it, which I didn't before today, highly recommend it. It's really depressing, and it's also got some really funny comedy from a so there's this character who has like these pressed lips, and every time somebody says something that irks him, or he has to repeat it back to him or try and express how ridiculous it is, he smacks his lips and goes. He's a communist who eventually makes so much money that he becomes such a pro-capitalist. It's pretty funny, his character arc in the film. But it's a really, really sad and depressing movie. And I mean, maybe one day we'll cover it on this podcast, but I highly recommend anybody to go out and check it out.
William A. Wellman, by the way?
Yes, it is William A. Wellman. Thank you for looking that up on Google.
Yes, sir. So I guess should we just get right on into it then?
Yeah, unless we want to delay it anymore.
Which I mean,
we got some eggshells that we're gonna walk a mile on.
Yeah, and look, for good reason. This is to just put it out there, it is a heavy film that deals a lot with themes of sexual assault and related content. And what makes it particularly difficult to speak about as well is that it's directed by Roman Polanski, who is a fugitive currently for sexual violence against minors. Yeah. So, sorry to take a sharp turn on the podcast, but
it makes it difficult sometimes to really go into subject matter like this, especially, you know, given the background of the director. We still watch the movie, and we're still going to review it and still talk about it, but it does make it quite difficult to really analyze it without looking at the person behind it. So just a little preface for everybody.
See, what I think, because I was talking with a friend about this when I was reviewing this originally for the Instagram, and I was saying, like, I don't really know necessarily how I'm going to talk about this, and I told them what movie it was, and they were saying, oh, that sounds like really gross, like in terms of like at the execution of it. And I was like, oh, why do you say that? And she said, oh, you know, because it's a movie in the 60s directed by a man. And it, like she said, it sounded exploitative, and it hit me like, oh God, like I, because, and I think I said this in the original review, at best this is a strong depiction of how and look, you know, I'm a guy, I don't know what, you know, that experience is like, but I imagine this is a intense and kind of hyperbolic in terms of trying to express the intensity of what the male gaze can be like and what the horror of that can be. And you know, I think the horror genre, for all its kind of exploitation and all its negatives, sometimes can be a really effective medium to discuss social issues. And absolutely, that is something that absolutely deserves to be discussed. However, at best, that is what it is, like putting forward a discussion and trying to amplify it and show the horror of what that can be like through this medium. However, at worst, and with the director, that's what makes it so foggy, is this is an exploitation of trying to make a sensationalized piece of, you know, exploiting a subject matter that really deserves to be taken seriously. And if this were, you know, I say what you will about, you know, only X, Y, and Z type of person can, you know, give X, Y, and Z type of story. But I feel that the fact that this is not only coming from a man and coming from specifically somebody with such a checkered character as Roman Polanski, it makes me uncomfortable and it makes me a little hesitant to view this film in good faith. And I know that was a long spiel, and
and I couldn't have said it any better. It's difficult for me sometimes to go back and listen to certain singers and certain performers. It definitely puts an asterisk next to their work, and it makes you possibly look at it in a different light. I have an easier time probably separating it than some people, but that's just me. And I understand where people come from when they feel uncomfortable. And especially a subject matter like this that may hit too close for home. So if anybody feels that they simply can't, I'm trying to pick my words carefully here.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody at home. I know we took quite a sharp turn in tone, but I understand where somebody would come from had they say they feel too uncomfortable to watch the film.
Certainly.
Especially like something as horrible as what Roman Polanski has done. It makes it difficult to watch a number of his films. I mean, even Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Which talks about this, which is one of the greatest horror films of all time. Just an iconic film. It's the number 2
seed on this thing.
And it's difficult to see that theme kind of reoccur throughout his work.
It does.
And, you know, on the other side, we kind of talk about the horror genre as a whole. And this is why I really do love the horror genre. It takes the rose-colored glasses off of what Hollywood or what some people like to see in the world. You know, with the history of film, they tend, you know, starting off, they tended to try and make everything seem larger than life and amazing and these endless worlds of possibility. And you kind of look at the blockbusters too in the world and the movies that make the most money, you know, superheroes overcoming the odds. And that's coming from somebody who absolutely adores comic book films and that superhero genre. But the thing about the horror genre is the fact that we can take a really, really gritty approach to the real terror in the world. Me and Brian talked about this last year when I was thinking about writing a piece on how important the horror genre is. And I mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street 2 and how it talks about, you know, this feeling of holding in your sexuality, especially it's a huge film for people that are gay. and it deals with a lot of tropes that just somehow got past the producers and everybody who made it. And this movie really speaks to a lot of people.
I personally, not to cut too much into what you're saying here, but I feel it elevates the film tremendously. And
absolutely.
Also, there's a documentary on Shudder about that very thing. Please sponsor us. Sorry.
And you see films like The Fly or like The Thing that talk about the AIDS crisis, things that people were pretty much too afraid to talk about. And we can, or, you know, even back in the day of the fear of people invading the country through communism.
Invasion of the body snatchers.
Invasion of the body snatchers. You know, the fear of and the dystopia that may lie in the future if we take technology too far. We look at people's inner morality, and we also look at a lot of social issues. And I feel like the horror genre can do that in a way that no other genre can, and can instill that same fear that some people experience on a daily basis, kind of condensed into 2 hours, obviously. But it's incredible to see what it can do when properly executed. And I know that was a really long diatribe that completely took a left turn, but we kind of look at the film Repulsion, and you look at the themes in it, and it just makes it so difficult and cloudy to kind of see what the director was going for as an artist when he does have such a checkered past.
Yeah. Checkered almost, I know I use that word, but like checkered's like an understatement too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he is. I mean, I think I speak for both of us, and I usually don't like speaking for more people in the room, but we can both agree that Roman Polanski is a garbage human being. He is a dumpster fire of a person. And that might be one of the most atrocious things that could ever occur in society. So I'm going to give a big fuck you to Roman Polanski if I didn't make that clear enough.
So when we speak on Roman Polanski, because there are, like, from a filmmaking perspective, Repulsion is a well put together film. But that, you know, again, that's not an endorsement of Roman Polanski as a person. But there are some, like, for example, there are parts like in the midway point, there's a very intense scene that is horrific that is in complete silence besides a ticking clock. And it's executed very effectively.
It's haunting. And I mean that in you know, it really encapsulates that haunting feeling.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you choose to watch it, you know that going in, but I mean, that's for the most part what I have to say. I mean, do you have anything?
No, it's hard for me to talk on any of this because it's a difficult thing that I never personally nor
possible thing for a film like this is that for somebody like myself and like yourself that probably aren't able to comprehend living in that scenario or having that fear in our minds the same way that a woman would, or somebody that is vulnerable to that in a way that we are not, it would hopefully be able to close that gap of comprehension a little bit more. And we would be motivated to, coming out of this movie, to try and rid that from our personal reality as much as possible, to whatever level of power we have over things like that, and understanding the horror of what it can be to live with that fear. And that's the power of the horror genre, I feel, is like it helps you empathize more with people who have to deal with issues like, for example, Get Out. You know, we'll get to this film later, but like, I don't know what it's like to be the only Black person in the room But through something like Get Out, that is something that Jordan Peele tries to express. And that is why horror is so effective as a genre for showing things that are uncomfortable or hard to deal with, is because, you know, it can hopefully close that gap a little bit more. Even though you can't fully comprehend it, you can start to empathize a little bit greater with pieces of art like that.
It's a very vulnerable genre when executed correctly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, after the commercial break, we'll be back and talking with something a little bit more jovial with the others, because I could go on and on about the others. But any other thoughts on Repulsion before we cut to that?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to leave it on a light note. in the movie Repulsion, you know, we talk about all these horrible things. But we got this one little bright spot in it. We got the hunch bunch.
Yes.
These hunched over Italian men that are all slapping their knees and creating a percussion beat while the middle one plays the guitar like I did opening the podcast. But my God, did that cheer me up when I saw that. I can't lie. I mean, I don't know about you, Brian, but that kind of brings a little bit of light to this dark film.
It is... So like half of my criticisms for films are like, you know, that doesn't need to be in there, cut that out, you know, like, but I'm so glad that this very irrelevant, like, little,
when she passes them on the street, you would just think they're just extras and that nothing's going to happen, but then they zoom in on them. Yeah. They completely steal the scene.
It's like I don't know if they serve like a greater relevance. Maybe there's something that like went over our heads or my head, or I don't know, but like it was just this nice little segue or this nice little back road compared to the rest of the film. You know, so like overall, I gotta say, if you had to rate the Hunch Bunch out of 10, what would you rate the Hunch Bunch?
See, now you're putting me in my Fantano shoes. You really want Melon to give them a review?
Dude, I want you to put on a flannel and shave some glasses, shave your head, grow a bizarrely tall mustache in the middle.
He is great. But if I was rating the Hunch Bunch, I'd say strong 9 to a light 10.
I'm feeling a 10 on this one.
It's a very exclusive club.
The very, if I had to rank them out, I mean, you know, you got The Godfather, you got The Shining, you got The Thing, The Hunch Bunch from Repulsion. It's in that club.
You know, it's even crazier. Not too long after this film, they all split up and they had some pretty successful careers, if I don't say so myself. They are known as the Italian Beatles.
Yeah. No, it's funny. They they actually went on to do, well, one of them went on to have a couple of collaborations with Chevy Chase.
Oh, really?
Last episode. I could imagine Dr. Loomis just saying, I prayed that he would go to hell, but I knew that hell wouldn't have him. Yeah, they were just scoring that sound. Just ham-boning the entire time.
Just ham-boning. Ham-boning!
But,
Never thought I'd quote Regular Show, did I?
So, Christian, who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor today is a great little place that I've been working at for a couple of years, and a great guy who also made the theme song for this podcast. Sandwich Bar is a restaurant on 33rd and Asbury. Fantastic place, right behind Treats and Treasures. They're open seasonally in the summer, but it looks like they're staying open a little longer this year. They're open 6 days a week, and they're closed on Tuesdays. Remember, they're cash only. Okay?
Cash only.
Cash only, people.
Rolling up with a debit, with a little MasterCard.
It's not gonna work. Nah. You gotta make it rain there.
Yes. Hit the ATM.
Sandwich Bar is a fantastic place. I don't just say that because I work there. I love their food. One of the best places, easily the best place in Ocean City, which is why it's won many awards. But I gotta say this. Dennis is an awesome guy, awesome food. Go give them a call before you come in, since, you know, new COVID precautions. It's 609-741-9888. That's 3 8s at the end. Not 3 8, 3 separate 8s. So yeah, go stop by. It's got some great lobster rolls.
It's the home of amongst, the lobster roll.
Amongst everything else, it's the home of the lobster roll.
It's got slow-cooked pork, chicken, cutlet sandwiches,
gluten-free options, guys.
Salads, hand-cut fries. You're getting your fries cut by some machine?
No, I gotta say,
hand-cut.
They are the best fries I've ever had, and they come with a side of sriracha mayo, which is much better than cheese, and I will fight anybody who says that. You can follow them on Instagram. They're at sandwichbarocnj, which is also their website, sandwichbarocnj.com. Yeah, you guys definitely should go. They're wonderful people. Great food.
Say I need a gift certificate.
Oh, they got you covered.
They got me oh, Dennis, you come through again.
Dennis, oh my God, you come through again. What can't you do? You sing, you play music, you direct movies, you cook. What can't you do, Dennis?
Absolutely. Check out Sandwich Bar, OCNJ on Instagram. Give Dennis some love. Tell him Pretentious Movie Sheet sent you.
Tell him Christian and Brian sent you.
And yeah, we love you, Dennis. Oh boy, look what we have here.
What do we have here? A couple of haters?
A couple of haters?
A couple of haters?
A couple of haters? I'm gonna keep it real with you, Chief. The Others.
The Others.
2001. Directed by one,
you can pronounce it.
I didn't have it up. Alejandro Amenábar. So yeah, we're looking at The Others, which is going up
2001
film. 2001
film.
The Others by director Alejandro, starring Nicole Kidman. Initial thoughts off the bat, what you think?
See, I knew which way you're going with it. I enjoyed it for what it was. It is very of the time. It screams early 2000s by the way it's shot. I mean, we're gonna obviously get into spoilers ahead, but to me, even not knowing the ending, it was pretty easy to figure out. I feel like there was so much foreshadowing, and I like foreshadowing in a film, but I don't know. They made it pretty obvious that that they were going to sixth sense us here.
Yeah, I mean, it feels kind of like a one-trick pony to me, not going to lie. This is the 48th seed, by the way. Repulsion being the 17th, which is, I feel, kind of surprisingly high.
That is surprisingly high for a movie I feel like not many people have seen.
No, very true. Initial thoughts.
I enjoyed it. I really did. I think the concept now, both me and you growing up long after this film came out, you know, I was born in 99. Brian, when were you born?
I'm a 98.
You're a 98 boy?
Maybe.
More for the Google Doc. But, you know, we both weren't really old enough to know about the movie, but what we grew up on and our generation kind of grew up on were these haunted house films, and they've been done to death.
Yeah, and, like,
yeah.
If you, maybe this was cutting edge when it came out, but I'm going to be honest, after having The Conjuring and
every single spin off
and the entire, like, oh my God, there's so many, the whole Annabelle series and the Ouija series, and like, I know there are a ton of modern haunted house, like Conjuring / Insidious spin-offs. I can't even think of them because they're so forgettable, and they all have the very same kind of song and dance of, like,
yeah,
we're going to set up a family that's, like, moderately likable, that has maybe one famous actor or actress, and then some, like, moderately spooky stuff is going to happen for, you know, like
little bits of it sprinkled throughout the film, but
then the final act,
the final climax where everything comes to a head.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as
and I think this does the final climax a little bit better than
I do too. The one thing I wouldn't have been able to guess was the fact that, you know, Victor and his family were alive. That was the one thing I wouldn't be able to tell. But, you know, somebody like me, I kind of avoided the Conjuring series and the Insidious series is pretty much because you could tell right off the bat that they all kind of are similar just from that trailer. I don't know. They never seemed appealing to me, so I never got into those series. Me growing up, and this isn't because I have such an intellectual taste, and I'm not, you know, as much as we call ourselves pretentious movie sheet, I'm a complete dope when it comes to everything. But I grew up on a lot of older films and a lot of older pop culture things, which is kind of like defined who I am, right? I pretty much everything I watch comes from the generations before me. And I think that's just because my parents and my friends kind of had similar tastes and I just kind of enjoyed it with them. Of course, I like experienced that. I'm not one of those people who goes, I was born in the wrong generation. But, you know, it's maybe I just hadn't seen as many of, I don't know how familiar you are with the Conjuring series or the Insidious series. I really am not too familiar with them, but I can kind of see exactly what they are.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it, you know, I think Conjuring, like, at least the first one and Insidious are, they stand on their own as relatively decent films and, you know, something probably worth watching. And, you know, they obviously were successful. That being said, not every money-making film is a good film. But obviously they did spark a lot. In terms of the others here, I mean, you had The Sixth Sense, which basically has,
came out in 99, so not too long, not too far removed after this.
It might as well be, in many ways, the same twist. And it just, you know, like, I think the execution of the reveal in this film is all right. Like, I think it's pretty good. But the execution was done so much better in The Sixth Sense, and there was a lot more to chew on throughout The Sixth Sense compared to this film.
I just think that where this film doesn't have it, The Sixth Sense has a lot of subtlety. It's very obvious, seeing headstones and, you know, playing around with the ghoulish aspects. I think, you know, even the the workers around the house, they come off a little too ghoulish. They're a little too obvious, I think. It's very on the nose. So if anybody hasn't seen this film, I feel like the twist and the reveal isn't as big of a gut punch as anybody would expect. If anything, I'm kind of let down. Because really? I feel like my... In a lot of ways, because I think the film's still good. Don't get me wrong. And I think the execution of the reveal is interesting. I don't know. I think it's just the film itself that...
Like, I think
still entertaining.
Like, the it being a seance, I thought was kind of interesting.
I did too. And I think it was interesting how it changes point of view from the characters too. Because the whole film, we've seen it from, the ghost's first-person perspective. But then once we switch to the family, it switches to what we're conditioned to see in a haunted house film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was probably one of the... you had Poltergeist and, a couple other haunted house films leading up to this.
But Amityville horror films had... been coming out since the 70s.
This was before the big like haunted house maybe resurgence, but
yeah. And I think this movie has a lot to do with it, because it did get a lot of critical acclaim and a lot of eyes on it. Obviously, because you have an actress like Nicole Kidman in it, and you have a lot of huge names attached to the
are you saying that Eric Sykes, who played Mr. Tuttle, is not the leading man?
You want to know something kind of funny about him, though? I thought this was worth mentioning. Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, who is an executive producer in this film, good old Middletooth, Middletooth Cruise, both of them really pressed to get Tuttle into this film. Apparently, those two were so impressed by his theater work that they really, really pushed to get him in this film.
Really? Huh. Hey, I mean, good for Mr. Sykes.
Good for Mr. Sykes. And, God, I'm blanking on the name of the woman who plays his wife in the film.
You are thinking of Fionnuala Flanagan. Sorry.
Flan Kasi Flan.
Fionnuala Flanagan.
Yeah, this was her last role in any film. She died at the ripe old age of 99. Christ.
Oh wow. We should all be so lucky.
Yeah, she's haunting me right now. She's cleaning up my kitchen.
She's haunting me with this fucking film.
Her spirit lives on in the film. The casting for this movie is quite interesting. I really gotta say, the children in this film actually do deliver, and child actors typically are more missed than hit, but I think they're really good, and it shows, because they auditioned. You don't think so? I thought the daughter did quite a good job.
I had seen this around the same time as Let the Right One In, and pretty sure we've seen some other child actors not too long ago. Jaws had some decent ones, and I don't know. I was not
impressed.
If I recall correctly, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting this confused with another one. I'll need to kind of consult what I said about this film originally, because it blurs together ever so slightly. But if I recall correctly, I just was kind of like,
I thought they did a decent job. And, I mean, they had quite a selection. They auditioned 5,000 kids.
That's a lot of kids.
That's ridiculous. But, that's insane, the amount of people that were auditioned for it. And I guess they made quite an impression to stick out from 5,000 other children.
Kind of looking back at some of the plus I'd hate to say it, but these are not the best child performances to boot. Yeah, kind of looking back at this review, I remember being really down on this film, and just kind of like it's like spooky for the sake of being spooky, kind of, and I don't know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We should probably jump a little bit into the plot.
Well, we open with the storybook from Shrek. Music to boot too. Oh my god, I got Shrek vibes, which came out I think around the same time.
They're ripping from Shrek.
Or Shrek's ripping from Cruise. Them. That'd be more fun interesting. Fact,
Cruise was actually pushing pretty hard to have a large ogre as the primary antagonist instead of Mr. Tuttle. So it's 1945. And Grace Stewart, she's in this really large home. Her husband's out fighting in World War II. And she is with her children. And
screaming. And might we add, we open up with a scream to start the movie.
Yeah, not like, oh my. See, like.
That was an uncalled for jump scare. You see, jump scares need to be earned, in my opinion. And that really was just pathetic.
Half the time, like, honestly, like, I watched The Host last night, right? That got me at times. I don't think I've been got by a jump scare in a hot minute, because usually you can just see them coming.
Yeah.
Like, they're so...
I've been so conditioned to expect the unexpected that it surprises me whenever there isn't a jump scare.
And a lot of that has to do with, like, the oversaturation of, like, films...
Oh, like especially the in the 2000s, series. Too.
Yeah, no, just because, like, I don't know, it just has... Like, films get measured on if they're scary or not by how many jump scares there are in them, and if you know you
well,
don't
because
have enough,
Brian, we got to put that night vision camera in the theater and show everybody jumping out of their seats and throwing popcorn behind their head so we can show you how scary the movie is.
I was watching a commentary on Final Destination, and there's a scene in one of the the Final Destination, I should say the worst by far in the series.
Oh, there's a scene, unequivocally.
Oh yeah, actually the fifth one's the best. There's a scene where they're all in a 3D movie, and like something happens on the screen, and everybody like jumps backwards.
Whoa!
It was pretty much it during the commentary track. They're like, oh, I fucking wish that was ever a thing in a 3D movie where everybody jumps back, but I digress. So they have three new servants come in that were the Tuttles and Mrs. Bertha Mills, Edmund Tuttle,
and Lydia.
A new girl named Lydia. Spoilers ahead. The reason Lydia's mute is because she was told that she is a ghost, and she hasn't spoken since. And that's why they don't tell Grace that her and her children are ghosts. Now, here's the thing. Wouldn't that make you want to control how they found out slightly more, because they're going to find out anyways? And yeah. I don't know how finding out through the seance is any less shocking than your mate being like, oh, hey, you know, sit down. We need to talk about some stuff. Like, if the idea is that she was shocked into being mute, why, like, wouldn't that spur you to be more careful? Like, I don't, it's just like there's a couple, and you know, the children, Anne and Nicholas, have this kind of photosensitivity apparently that causes them to not be able to be in the sunlight, or they have an allergic reaction and they die.
Yeah, and That was the other thing that threw me off, and similar criticism to what you were having there, Brian. They wake up screaming. She just realizes that the curtains are up. Wouldn't that be a sign that either you would start thinking that they grew out of it or there's something off here, since it's not like it instantly became daylight?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe, maybe they just woke up, but like, I just...
Yeah, like, but it's not like the curtains were completely gone, and I'm sure they slept. It's not like the sun just magically appears within a second and they woke up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they do some stuff with it. They do some things that are like, you know, they'll have scares like that, and there's a big thing about, you know, you have to close the doors behind you.
A lot of foreshadowing.
No, I mean, like, that's like they do some things with it, but it all kind of feels like for the purpose of like, oh, you know, we're going to leave the door open later, or we're going to have that scene where they're totally exposed to light and Nicole Kidman has to come in and save them. And I mean, also, like, Nicole Kidman is so unlikable. Not as an individual, but as a character in this film. Grace is I just find really unlikable because she's so mean to the other servants. And then she's kind of just, like, her relationship with her kids is a little weird. And then when you find out how they died, it's like, are we supposed to like her more? Are we supposed to like her less? Because, like, I kind of fucking hate her, you know?
Well, they try and justify it through saying she went mad. I don't remember if they said it was through an illness or something, but she did go mad. And she took her own life, I guess, once she came to the realization. But I was having a similar
context. Spoiler alert, they're all ghosts, and she killed her children.
Suffocated them with a pillow. Yeah.
And then they reveal this in the end, like, oh, you know, we're all here together now. It's like, no, motherfucker, you killed your children.
There's yeah,
and look, they, you know, there are some instances with complex psychology, but like, I do not trust this film to have the greatest hand in that.
And the other thing is you know, something as horrifying as killing your child, that's just unforgivable. you know, that's, to me, that's probably the worst fucking crime against humanity you could commit. I don't know. I really don't, because they try and justify it by saying she went mad. But I don't remember how they explained it, if she had an illness or if she got, you know, stricken with a disease. But,
well, I think it...
And it affected her mind.
I think it had something to do with her husband being away for so long, which, like, hey, you know, great piece of female writing, showing her independence. If that's what made her go crazy, I don't know.
Hey, you know, I guess it's just of the time, and she got overwhelmed by the large house and the two children.
Oh, and the abundance of servants helping her keep it, and you know.
That's what I was getting at, if you couldn't tell.
Sorry, I'm a little slow. Yeah, no, so they set up this Book of the Dead too, where they and this is a real thing, you know. I'm sure most people listening to this know this, that they used to have dead people propped
photographed.
Up and photographed after their death, and this comes back later in a way that I do like the reveal. There's murmurs of, sorry.
No, I was gonna say, you see, maybe it was just me, but the second they pulled out their book, I'm like, okay, I know what we're gonna see one of the main characters in that book. I mean, that's very obvious.
You know, so they have, like, again, it's like spooky shenanigans. They have a priest come over, and like, they keep hearing whispers about Victor, and one of the kids is talking to Victor. And
there's a lot of exposition as well. You know, we get the no electricity, no phones, no pianos, New Germans. So they essentially are Amish. You know, it's a lot of exposition. The piano's
playing itself.
Yeah. Well, the second they introduced the piano, I'm like, okay, I wonder what's going to happen here. No, nobody can play it. It gives me migraines. Also,
yeah,
that foreshadowing of she has a headache all the time.
Oh, I didn't even... God. I hate that. I think I hate that. I don't know. There's just so, you know, and the, see, like with Mrs. Mills.
Yes.
She, like they do subtle little things, like getting rid of the curtains or, you know, leaving some of the doors open or whatever. I think some of that stuff is them compared to the, quote unquote ghosts, which are actually alive. I'm pretty certain. And they act as if she's trying to like hint like, hey, they're, you know, we're trying to have you realize, you know, like, oh, you know, you're actually dead. Again, just like if it's so important to you to control and make sure that they're not going to freak out and go mute, then like, I feel, just be direct with people. Like this whole, like, you know, trying to, you know, put them into, you know, get them used to the warm water before it's, you know, it gets really hot. Like, I feel like it leaves so much up to chance.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they find out through a fucking seance, which, like...
Well, not even that. Like, even before that, they find out that they're fucking ghosts, and they see their fucking tombstones. I mean, that's haunting in itself. Yeah. Pun intended. Or when she's firing the gun, and, you know, they're trying to talk Nicole Kidman off the ledge, or Grace, or whatever. She's Grace in the movie. More like Disgrace. But... Yeah, no, I think some of the logic in the movie didn't make sense. Like I said, with the curtains disappearing, were they just going to... I mean, something would have to be up. I guess you could chalk it up to, oh, they grew out of it, but...
Well, that's because they're ghosts.
No, that's what I'm saying, that the mother's logic would be they grew out of it instead of going to right to their ghosts, right? That they're trying to ease them into things. But the thing that I didn't understand at all was why they would take those curtains off, because nobody else has been in the house.
Well, other, I mean, than it's either Mrs. Mills or the people that now live there.
So either way, that's an extremely traumatizing thing, especially for the mother too. It's ridiculous to just throw them into that kind of situation. And like I said, you would know something's up because, you know, I have allergies myself because I'm a weak boy. I've got bad genes. But, you know, it takes a couple of seconds to kick in. Sometimes it takes a minute. Sometimes it takes an hour. The sun doesn't just fucking instantly appear. They would have woken up with some kind of rash or some kind of, I don't know. And I also don't know the severity of this case. I didn't study the disease itself that much, but any kind of allergy, I mean, it takes into effect rather quickly. So it's not like the sun just came up. It was bright and shiny in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. That just frustrated me.
Again, the whole photo allergy thing,
was the one thing to set up, like, oh, they're trying to add this eeriness to it of, oh, they can only be in the darkness.
Yeah, but it feels cheap.
It does, and it sets up for a couple of
scares that
really never shocked me. Yeah. I don't know, maybe it's just because even me not seeing this movie, it, to me, I don't know if it just was because, I don't know, we're conditioned to kind of expect weird twists in these kind of movies, but I don't know. I saw the ending coming from a mile away.
Yeah, I don't like the, you know, they have the Book of the Dead that they see the three new servants in, and you know they're trying to fight. I should also note the father comes back for a little bit because he died on the front lines, and then he decides he's going to leave when. And here's the other thing. He leaves when he finds out what Grace did, but that implies that the kids remember what she did. So like, why is everybody just acting like something's not like incredibly wrong? Like, I understand.
It's very casual.
Yeah. Like, I understand they say later, like, oh, she thinks that, you know, like she got a second chance, but like, the kids, people remember, like, why aren't we talking? Why aren't they being like, hey, mom, remember when you suffocated us, you know? Like, Jesus.
You know, and there are a couple of things that stuck out to me. There were things that were just creepy and eerie and weird just for the sake of being creepy, weird, and eerie. Do you exactly. Remember there was one part in the film, I wrote it down here. Where they were talking about the family, because the daughter, she draws out a portrait of the family, which is also another very cheap 2000s-y trope of having the child draw out the family in crayon. But she says something about breast milk, and I just never, that just never came back to full circle. I just didn't understand that at all. I just wrote down breast milk question mark.
I will say the casting of the old lady who's the medium, I felt was effective. Renee Asherson, excuse me. I can't pronounce anything today.
The milky-eyed old lady.
Yeah. She. I thought she did a pretty decent job. And when they
she was in, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of been overused, too. We kind of use the elderly and children.
Yeah.
To create these scares. I do, that actually was a scene I truly enjoyed though. When she reaches out and you see it's this old frail hand.
Yeah,
and,
I was going to say like that was like, I like that, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, we get an homage to Halloween with all the sheets in the one room.
Yeah.
I thought that was that just made me think Halloween for a little bit, but yeah, I mean, one thing that also made me laugh around that time was, so the daughter teases her younger brother quite a bit. She's kind of an asshole, but I mean that's who she is. She says, you know, all ghosts are in white sheets and chains, right? And then she goes, ooh, and then he goes, I just thought that was a good stereo back and forth. It just is funny. Yeah, a lot of, I think another trope that tends to be overused, and it when it's used correctly, it can be really fascinating and really interesting because religion can be a really creepy, kind of eerie subject.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
But she's of course a Bible thumper.
That's right. Oh God, I hate her so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a macabre, like, you know, it's creepy because it's in the Bible. I don't know. That I feel like that was kind of cheapened in the movie. It was just used to really set up a couple of lines to say, like, the living and the dead never cross. I read it in fucking Abraham 22:22-42. I don't know. It's, I don't know the Bible. I went to Catholic school all my life. I still don't know anything from the Bible. No Austin 3:16 though.
Is she supposed to be humbled in this movie? Like, is she supposed to like have her comeuppance and or like because they set that up I hope at least that they set it up as a character flaw that she is so zealously like Bible thumping, and not that, you know, that's not to say that religious things or religious people are like bad or flaws, but you know, it is a thing that can be used, it can be wielded in negative ways, and I feel that she wields it in negative ways, and she talks a lot about the afterlife and stuff like that, and of course, I mean, she's in the afterlife.
That's just such a overused horror trope. I mean, you know, we think of really famous movies like Carrie, where the mother's abusive and she uses God to justify it.
But see, like Carrie, the mom gets...
Carrie's a fantastic movie.
Like Carrie's great. I think it's on the list. But like her mom gets her comeuppance. I don't see Grace, Nicole Kidman, get any comeuppance.
She offed herself. I don't know.
Also killed her kids, and now they're together forever and supposed to be kind of happy in the afterlife together.
I also, like, so does this movie prove that her religion is a hoax? Because are they in... No, I'm serious. Like, yeah. I can't understand if they're in purgatory, if this is, like, damnation, because why are her children... maybe they were unbaptized. Maybe. Because they mentioned that line about being baptized, right? Don't they mention a line about being baptized?
They do, but, there's no way...
And then she goes, I'm baptized. But how would they get baptized? Well, maybe the priest came to that. I don't know. Maybe. All unbaptized children go to purgatory.
Years ago. They were baptized years ago. But, like, also, is the priest dead? I don't...
There's a couple of things, too. By the way, the director, I thought this was interesting. He attended Catholic school all of his life, but he himself is agnostic, or so he claims.
I mean, like, I don't...
There are a lot of things, and this is not to take away from my feelings. I still think it's an entertaining movie. I think it's a good, easy watch. It's an easy watch. I wouldn't say it belongs on the list of the greatest horror films of all time. And for some reason, it got unbelievable critical acclaim.
It really did. I mean, like a good twist can blow people away. And again, maybe...
Yeah, but I just feel like the twist was really obvious, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't...
Oh, by the way, I want to mention this line. Whenever I fucking get pissed at somebody, I'm just going to call them a cowdy custard. What the fuck is that? Isn't that the goal, Brian, to haunt somebody?
Yo, I was thinking about this.
You get to be entertaining forever.
I would love to be a ghost, and I would be an asshole if I were a ghost. I would scare the shit out of everybody.
See, you see, ghosts are like, I think ghosts are misrepresented. And you're perpetuating that stereotype. If I was a fucking ghost, yeah, I'd do the occasional scaring, but I'd just be fucking pranking people left and right.
Yeah.
I would be pranking the shit out of people, not to scare them, just to be like, because they'd never fucking know. I'd start fucking with them in ways that were just really stupid.
You'd be like the daughter in Spy Kids 4, just like putting baby powder in hair dryers and shit.
Exactly. Or... eventually I'd probably take it too far.
Someone dies and then they show up as a ghost.
I got a really good prank. I'm gonna put a toaster in his bathtub.
He's like, dude, what the fuck? Like seconds later he's
gotcha.
Like, yeah. Prank.
It's just a prank, bro.
So I mean, basically to wrap this movie up. They realize through the Book of the Dead that, you know, the three servants are, and by the way, I'm using the word servants because that's what the Wikipedia article uses. They realize there are ghosts, and then nighttime comes and like, they have a kind of showdown where they're trying to keep the ghosts out. And again, it's like, you know, Mrs. Mills, if this was such a thing that you needed to control and make sure they didn't why didn't you call out to them at that moment? Hey, you know, sit down. We'll explain.
like everything's all right. Just like hear us out. Like I don't know. I think she kind of. I don't know. They walk in on the seance. They find out they're ghosts. Nicole Kidman expositions to the kid about how she murdered them, and then they end the movie being like, "This is our house, and we're kind of British." And it's a thumbs down for me, man. I did not like this.
You see, I wouldn't give it a thumbs down. It's easy watch. It's easily consumed. To me, it's mildly enjoyable. And look, maybe I'm just watching it from. I'm not taking the pretentious. I'm not sitting in the pretentious seat, if that makes sense. No. I looked at this movie for what I do for a lot of like 2000s-y horror movies. Of, it's an easy watch. It's something that's not.
I found it boring, and that.
I mean, I can see
made it easy for me, you know.
To me, I understand that because I think the imagery is kind of just bland. I mean, I think that's why period pieces tend to not be so thrilling. And plus, like, there really isn't much world that's been built. You know, that the house isn't really explored that much. We're essentially only in a couple of rooms.
It's also just really blank. There's like no sheets on.
Also, like, I wanted to know about this because the fog, because there's fog throughout the whole film. And then towards the end, it starts to clear up. And she also hits that, like, wall of fog where her husband comes back to talk to her for a little bit. Is the fog, like, a part of the specter world, or is it something? Like, that wasn't explained either. I wanted to know more about that. Because she couldn't leave the house. She was confined to only the house. So is the fog blocking her? If she kept walking, would she hit something?
Oh, is it like a video game? You hit the edge of the map?
Yeah, you know? Like some kind of barrier. So I wanted to see that a little more explored because I just felt like I just don't fucking know about that. You know.
If you had to rate this out of 10.
Out of 10. I'd say strong 6 to a light 7.
I'm gonna say a strong 4. I'm sorry. Four.
You see, I wouldn't go that far.
Which, you know, fair. You know, like, I don't know. It's the first film on this list that I'm kind of like, yeah, I, you know, if I could switch this out for just grabbing a good horror movie off the top of my head, I'd say The Host. No, Hush comes to mind, even though that...
Yeah, Hush is a fantastic film, and it also takes place in one setting.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's one of the best horror movies of all time. I think it's even debatable whether or not it is a horror movie, but like...
I don't know, like... Before we even came on the podcast, Brian, you were telling me you had some gripes with this movie, and... I see where you're coming from, but I still think it's entertaining in yeah. some ways, and it's an easy watch. It's easily consumable. There's nothing offensive about me that truly like makes me hate the movie. But I mean, that's just my opinion, and I think we'll have to agree to disagree.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know,
no, it's cool.
Podcast is kind of, you know, about and. You know, like
we're gonna throw hands after this.
I can get behind like horror movie kind of like spinning their wheels or schlock or filler sometimes, but mainly when it's like a slasher or like there's still something to kind of gawk at when it's a
I really
Haunted
love
House
the
movie.
Yeah, I really love the movie Midsommar, and that really is pretentious-y.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you know, I'm okay with like. Some schlock and some filler, as long as it's like kind of entertaining filler. But when it's trying to be spooky, but not really at all, I find it kind of boring, and that's why I feel this. Where I feel this film lies for me,
I think it's also the setting and yeah. The world that could have been explored, even if it's in
no
that
Avatar.
One
the world building's weak.
And, you know, like people say, well, you know, it's only a house. Well, you can really make a house a character. Look at the fucking Nightmare on Elm Street fucking movies. That house is in every single goddamn movie. That has been in more movies than Krueger. It always comes back to the house.
I think we might disagree here. What film advances?
See, this was difficult for me. I think each one has their very strong points, but it's difficult because I think from an artistic perspective, I'm going to have to go Repulsion.
Oh!
Yeah, and pretty much because it lays down quite a bit of groundwork for a lot of directors in the future. But the story of Repulsion really isn't, there really isn't much of a story. It's very surreal in a lot of ways. And yeah. I think maybe the others has a stronger story, but it's difficult for me to decide because they're two very different movies. And it's strange too, because most of Repulsion just takes place in one house where creepy things happen, right? But I don't know.
There were parts in Repulsion I think I connected with more, like for example the rotting fish shot. I don't know, that just like with the kind of despair that she seems to feel, like that I kind of vibed with. But also just like that's like a small part. But like overall, I think it's executed better. I think it's an example where less is more. I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Repulsion's the better film.
I would definitely go Repulsion. And did we give our scores for Repulsion?
Not really. We rated the band.
Rate the band.
Repulsion, maybe about a 6, just because I feel it is kind of ambiguous and there are some parts that do drag.
See, I'd give it a strong 7.
I vibe with that.
Yeah, I think it's it's an interesting film, kind of really delving into a deeply disturbed character, but also undertaking a lot of really interesting ideas and themes, and still making it incredible. And plus, you know, I always kind of say, like, I try and curve these movies based on the time they came out, and I like factoring that into it as well. A lot of amazing, amazing effects in Repulsion.
That is true.
Yeah. I think the imagery is amazing in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Repulsion, I guess, advances and will be taken on the fly. Which, yeah, I mean, you know, I
wonder how that's going to go.
Yeah. I think if we're up against something other than the others, I think it, I don't know how it would have gone, but hey, I mean, you know, it is a well-made film.
It so. Is. I think it kind of fell into the Peeping Tom category as well, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, nothing like 60s filmmaking.
Anything you want to plug before we, you know, head on out?
Yeah, everybody, so as I mentioned on the previous podcast, Meat Canyon has finally reached his goal. Now he's shooting for flex goals because he needs to flex on them. That's awesome. If you guys still want to donate, he's still up. If you guys haven't, go do something nice for somebody. Go check out the Monster Factory if you can. Follow them on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. They're all over. Eventually when shows come around, come. I'll be there. You'll probably see me. And you know, support whatever local businesses you can. I know a lot of restaurants are kind of struggling. They're either struggling or they're doing really well for themselves. So order out sometimes, guys. If you got the extra cash, treat yourself.
Absolutely. Let's see. We got a Pretentious Movie Sheet on Instagram, Pretentious Movie Sheet on TikTok, Pretentious Movie Sheet on YouTube, and Movie Sheet on Twitter. If you would like to rate us 5 stars on iTunes and give us a follow on all the other
you guys apps. Can too. Please write a review. Those go a long, long way.
Yeah, and we really appreciate it. So, hey, you know, I've been Brian.
I'm Christian. You can follow me on Instagram, Christian Rocco. There's a couple of underscores in there, 41, and Real Jay Copeland. Thanks so much, guys, for tuning in and listening to us just shoot the shit for a couple of hours about things that kind of help us take our mind off the current situation going on in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care, guys.
Enjoy the Hunch Bunch.